Welcome to the HB5 podcast, where we talk about co-working, productivity, and building your future lifestyle. This is episode 6 for January 4th, 2016. And we've got a full house this week in the studio. We've got, to my right here, we've got Dieter.
Hey.
We got Jay.
Hello.
And we've got Tecto.
Hello, hello.
So today, we've been having fun in the studio before the podcast talking about some subject matter for today's topic, which is Mac app recommendations. So what are those apps that that we like to use on our Macs? And that we use Macs, most of us use Macs predominantly. We use other platforms too, but I feel like we can talk about this. So nothing, no slam on other OSs. They're great, I'm sure. But we are going to talk about Macs today.
You were so convincing.
Yeah, I tried this. I'm sure they're fine.
Good for you if you're running one of them.
Yeah.
Way to sell it.
Passive-aggressive OS podcast.
Yeah. But I think we did cover in pre-roll that in the other platforms, a lot of times you don't really, you wouldn't even care to podcast about this or listen to a podcast about your favorite apps more than likely because
so,
you're just
so are you
be
saying
using,
that we're a bunch of fanboys?
Well, I don't know.
The possibility is high.
Yeah, it could be fanboyish.
I don't care.
I don't know. Whatever.
Judge away.
We like what we like.
You're okay with your status.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's right. Own it.
Yeah. we like an OS that's a joy to use.
A pleasure to use.
Except when it doesn't work.
Yeah, then it's a pain.
Yeah.
I disagree. I like an OS that I don't notice, which I guess does translate into being a joy to use. But yeah, if the OS makes me notice it's obtrusive, it gets in my way, I'm non-productive, then I'm annoyed by it. So I want it to disappear.
Yep, I agree.
Exactly.
So what we basically, Dieter wrote up a few questions, and so what we talked about doing was each of us, for each of these questions, picking... And this is tough to do, but to pick one application for each of these questions, and we'll kind of go through them because there's just an exhaustive list of applications that we could all list and talk about. But the idea here that we could
episodes
maybe
ahead.
Yeah, episodes yeah. ahead, and the idea is that we could maybe talk a little more in depth about each of these apps. So we'll have the equivalent of, you know, 9 to 12 apps. So we've got some duplicates, so we won't really have 12. But at any rate. So question number one, what is the first thing that you install on a fresh Mac? Go.
So I answered, I asked the questions and I answered this one first. So I'm going to jump in and say that the first thing that I install on any fresh Mac is Dropbox.
Horrors.
Oh, not because I want to run Dropbox, but because I want to sync my passwords in 1Password.
So, quick point on this. If I were purely Mac OS and iOS, I would not do this. I'm right there with you. But I do this primarily because I want my 1Password keychain on Dropbox for Android and other platforms to be able to quickly access it as well, as opposed to putting it in iCloud.
And that's an excellent point. And up until very recently, those keen among you would say iCloud is where you want to sync it. And I agree. The iCloud syncing is far better
yes.
than the Dropbox syncing. I have a lot of frustration where things won't sync to my iPad or from my iPhone to Dropbox, and it frustrates the crap out of me.
Yeah, occasionally I have to delete 1Password entirely and reinstall it and reconnect it to Dropbox yes. in order to get it to sync on my iPad, for instance.
Yes, but the reason I went from iCloud back to Dropbox is because of the Dropbox vaults, Dropbox for Teams, that you can't run iCloud. And actually, you know what?
I can run iCloud on your personal.
That's what it is. So I was doing vaults in preparation for the Dropbox for Teams. And now that the Dropbox for Teams is going, and I've got one going for... We've got one going
no,
for...
No, 1Password for Teams.
Sorry, 1Password
yeah, yeah,
for Teams.
Yeah, because there is a Dropbox for Teams.
That's right.
Yep.
Sorry, I'm confusing terms here.
But you're
yeah.
having to... But I think it's because you're having to run the beta...
I'm having to run the beta...
Of 1Password. And I
exactly
bet that's the reason.
For Teams.
Yep.
That's what
so,
it is.
So once... I have a feeling that once 1Password is released, once all this team stuff is released into the mainstream app store... The iCloud stuff will probably work,
and I will
point.
Switch back to it immediately.
So what's going on is 1Password. A couple months ago, released a beta version of 1Password for Teams. It's a competitor with LastPass.
Competitor.
It's a,
we're sorry, LastPass, but yeah. You've been lapped and yeah. then lapped again.
Yeah, and yeah. LastPass recently they were bought out. Who bought those guys?
I think LogMeIn bought them.
LogMeIn.
Prepare for ruin.
Yeah. So I mean, it LastPass has tons of issues. I don't really want to spend time going into it, but me personally, I just 1Password is. I'll just say this is a lot easier to use. It's a lot cleaner. Works on a lot of the same OSs. Seems like they. Maybe put a little. They try a little harder on the security thing.
The security is
perfect.
The team syncing is fantastic too. It could be that they'll offer their own competitor for just your basic personal syncing needs, which would be fantastic.
Yep.
Yeah, it's pretty slick. But so. you can use Teams personally also.
Yeah. So all that to say, if you were not using 1Password for Teams. You could potentially be on the iCloud syncing. And
should be.
And should
it's
be.
Better than Dropbox.
Yep.
So definitely check out the 1Password for Teams. We'll put a link in the show notes as usual, but it's definitely worth checking out. But you will have to run 1Password Beta 5 to utilize Teams on
and
your
you
Mac.
You will get update notifications every
All
other
the time.
Day.
I just actually got one.
Yeah, they're quite busy.
Now.
By the way, I personally think a great use case for 1Password for Teams is shared passwords within a family. And I actually started doing this just over the last week.
Yep.
So I have a vault that's my wife and I. I have a vault that's my wife and I and child one. Another one that's my wife and I and child two and so on. And then as they age out, so to speak, my oldest is 14. They can kind of take their vault and drop me and move on with life. Mm-hmm. You can move things between vaults, which is really yep. nice. So they could potentially take the passwords that we're sharing at 18, move those items over into their own personal vault, change the passwords. I don't know how to get into their stuff anymore.
Yeah, yep. It's definitely.
But they also have to pay for their own Netflix now, which is.
Oh, well, we've had that conversation.
Yeah. Well, by then, it'll be whatever.
Yeah, or
whatever. Yeah, whatever's the thing then.
Yep.
So that's good stuff. I agree completely, Dieter, on the 1Password. It's pretty slick.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of leads in. Let me quickly talk about mine next because it kind of leads into something interesting. So I put just to do something a little different. I put down BitTorrent Sync as a first one. So this doesn't necessarily mean I install BitTorrent Sync exactly first. I probably do install some other things first, but it's one of the first. I'm using BitTorrent Sync, and I'm on a paid license version only so that I can have ability to do permissions and some other things. But you can do quite a bit on the free version of BitTorrent Sync. I actually use it to sync the desktop folder of my Mac, documents folder, trying to think what else. I've got a projects folder, a sites folder for development, some things like that. That's close to it. Plus, I've got some businessy shares between some of the folks here at HP5. But I'm basically syncing all that stuff across three Macs, two laptops, and an old iMac at home that I leave running all the time.
Now, what is this for? Is it for continuity for you?
It's well, so a couple of things. So obviously, there's the aspect of BitTorrent Sync allows you to unlimited share advantages here. It's kind of a Dropbox filling thing. Like, so I can
it's self-hosted Dropbox in a sense.
Yeah.
So you control the encryption. One of the little known facts about Dropbox is that while your connection to them is encrypted and everything is stored there encrypted, they have the keys. So they basically can say, hey, oh, hey, NSA, you want in? And there are indications that the NSA is already all up in everything on Dropbox.
Yeah, they've actually said some stuff publicly that kind of left them open to that interpretation. So it's kind of weird. But it's
they're not allowed to say that they are, though.
But it's also...
Yeah, NSLs, et cetera.
But it's also unlimited because you're hosting it, and it's your storage. So you can can use as much as you want. There's no limits on storage. It does mean that one machine needs to be running for you.
Yeah, all the time.
All the time or something. You need to. But so what we do is, so if you're sharing a folder with a number of people, the nice thing is somebody's machine's usually up and running, and it means you can kind of get files and things. But it's slick. Now, what the tie-in of 1Password is, I'm trying something a little different. I'm syncing all of my Macs 1Password across BitTorrent Sync, which takes me out of Dropbox
entirely.
And I also because it means that vault is in a more secure location.
Now, Dropbox, I'm sorry, 1Password for iOS works with BitTorrent Sync?
No. So what I'm doing, this is the only drawback. What I'm doing is I'm 1Password on the Mac has a built-in Wi-Fi server, so you can sync right. over a network. So periodically, I'll sync my mobile devices, Android and iOS devices. I'll sync those with my Mac, one of my main Macs, occasionally. You know, the downside is that if you added a password somewhere and you need it somewhere else, it's kind right. of a pain. But that doesn't happen daily
that
to
often,
me.
Right.
So it's kind of like, as long as, you know, once a week I kind of update and sync those guys, it's working out. It seems to be fine. But the security of knowing that it's not in sitting in Dropbox is kind of nice.
So effectively, it's never out there in the cloud on yeah. somebody else's hardware.
Right. So
that's great.
So that's what I'm using BitTorrent Sync for.
I would love 1Password implement integration with BitTorrent Sync.
There's actually, and I'll be glad to put it in the show notes, so people, please put the votes out there. There is a forum already on 1Password's forum, the Agile Bits forum site,
requesting
BitTorrent Sync. I've already added Excellent. My 2 cents. I think
yep, I'll go
some
vote.
People here have. But I'll put the link in there and love to have listeners, anybody, add the vote for that, because that would be huge. Huh. Just to have that native across all of the 1Password yep. stuff. And that would... It would help 1Password out too.
Well, it takes a further step security wise. It takes a further step towards being able to support enterprise and businesses that need to keep their keys internal and under their control. And there's something like BitTorrent Sync gives a company under security requirements the ability to control all that.
Yep, exactly. All right, who's up next?
I'll go.
Cool.
This is Jay. I use Evernote, or I'm starting to use Evernote more and more now. I haven't learned about some of the ways that Evernote works, predominantly from you guys and from some of the other, I guess, HB5 folks and people in the periphery. I'm kind of starting to move away some from Google Docs, and Google is a content store and information store for pretty much all my stuff. You guys gave me a fair beating in the pre-show about that. So I'm learning about Evernote not only for just capturing my own kind of ideas or, oh, this is interesting, I want to read it later, but also as a kind of a collaboration tool or a way to share things with other people. I've had a lot of fun, and I've wasted a lot of hours on Flipboard flipping through content and flipping it into notebooks, but then I never actually go and read what's in those notebooks. And what I'm learning is that if I instead move that content, if it's interesting enough to go back and read, move it into an Evernote notebook that I actually use and touch instead of curating content that I'd really honestly never see again.
Very helpful.
Yeah, Evernote's good stuff. I think we're in a world of transition. Evernote has about 100 million users, and they've been in the news for losing users. They're on the decline yep. now. It'll be interesting to see what happens to them. They're certainly not going to go away anytime soon.
No, and you look at, I think I'm pushing 12,000 notes in my Evernote notebooks.
Yep.
This month.
No.
Right.
Uh-huh. Migrating anywhere else is going to be a little bit of work.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I've got about 11,000 notes, and it's a lot when you have out there that kind of stuff. But
I have 11.
11 notes.
Well, that's so far.
Yeah. Well, and... Yeah,
that's how it starts, man.
I was there. Good stuff. So, Tecto, you're up next.
Well, I think I kind of already weighed in with Dieter that the very first thing I install is Dropbox, and that's actually true across iOS and Android. Pretty much any device that I am setting up, the very first thing I install is Dropbox, and then right behind it is 1Password, because everything else requires a username and password and account. And all that stored in 1Password. So I don't think I have anything more to add. I kind of jumped in with Dieter's lead-in.
Cool. That sounds good. So I think the takeaway from this segment is 1Password is something to look at. It's a more secure way. I won't say completely secure. Nothing's completely secure. It's a more secure way to store your passwords. It encrypts those passwords. It encourages you to use completely unique and random different passwords
for
every service.
It makes it very easy to. I think this is one of the issues I have with LastPass as opposed to 1Password, having used both for years now. LastPass has, I think, a lot of the same intention as far as you know, feature set, etc. But the ease of use in 1Password is so high that the ability to generate a random password right there in the browser with a really much more intuitive user interface than anything LastPass has ever offered, and then have it automatically save back into 1Password. The only thing I run into here and there with 1Password is I generate a password and I have to go back over and find that password and convert it to a login and add the user account. When, in a lot of cases, that's an email address in order to kind of complete the process, because when you generate the password, it's just tied to the website that you were on when you generated the password. It doesn't necessarily hang around and prompt you for what was the corresponding username.
In the Mac app, there's a convert to login
correct
option.
Yeah, there's a button. I have to go awesome. Back over to 1Password to do that, is all I'm saying, kind of complete the workflow.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't happen in iOS that way.
Yeah, they don't have that.
Yeah, I tried the other day. I was disappointed it wasn't there.
Yeah.
So our next question is, that Dieter posed was, which apps can't you live without? So again, this is a short list, but we picked one each.
This is the most painful part of all, was hearing that.
I think limiting ourselves.
I think we got hung up
one.
Right here. Yeah.
Yeah. So which apps can't you live without? And we'll start. With Dieter.
Yeah. So obviously, 1Password is one, but we already talked about that. So the other one that I just use constantly throughout the day, anytime I'm sitting in front of any Mac, is Alfred, and Alfred is a task launcher app similar to. Quicksilver, I think, was the,
yep.
the previous
Quicksilver
one.
Quicksilver ran for a long time. Launch Bar is another one out there.
Yeah, that's a solid
really
one, too.
Really good.
I think they're both still out there.
Yes.
But Alfred is the heir apparent to the throne, and they've just been doing some great work with Alfred. And actually, which version of OS X was it that kind of Sherlocked Alfred in Spotlight?
I think it's Mavericks? Actually Mavericks or El Capitan. One of the
Mavericks started to, but El Cap kind of... added a lot more to it, because now you can do a lot of Alfred type functionality.
Sherlocked. Yeah, I can get Sherlocked.
It seemed like an unsuccessful Sherlock. It Sherlocked it from the sense of the everyday Mac user who
let's speak to that. You get a brand new Mac, and by default, Command Space, which is muscle memory for me, opens up a Spotlight. Mm-hmm. So one of the first things, right there with Dieter in this sense, one of the first things I'm doing after Dropbox and 1Password is installing Alfred and going into System Preferences and turning that Spotlight keyboard shortcut off. And then I'm taking over in Alfred Preferences, I'm taking over that keyboard shortcut, so Command Space. There's a lot of muscle memory. You know, I've seen other people hold on to the control space and so on.
That's what I do.
I don't find control as fast as I find the button right next to the space bar.
Well, I actually switch control space to be my Spotlight, so I still have it in case I want
put option space, which is the default shortcut for Alfred. I switch them around, so Spotlight is on option space. And
I never
Alfred
use Spotlight.
I occasionally use it, but not that often. Sometimes Alfred doesn't
find something, and I'll use Spotlight because it may find it.
Yes,
it's strange.
Spotlight's
it is weird because they're using some of the same database to do the search. But
Spotlight will display more results too, which is somewhat advantageous. But Alfred is what I use for most of the heavy lifting. And like sitting down to the clean install of an app, I'll install Alfred, or a clean install of OS X, I'll install Alfred, and then I will drag every single app out of my dock.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
The dock should only show running apps.
Yep.
Yep.
Absolutely. I hate the whole, like, I've got 50 apps and they're all in my bar and they're so tiny.
Yep.
That now I'm using Magnify and now my bar moves every time I try to do anything with it. Maddening. I cannot understand people using it that way. But Jobs was right, apparently. That's the way you're supposed to use it.
Really?
That was the design, yeah.
Well, I don't care for it. So Alfred not only launches apps and searches your file system, but it also does clipboard management. You can run custom workflows. I'm going to pull up my Alfred here.
It is an extreme power tool in terms of all the things it can do.
Yeah, there's a ton of add-ons.
I don't think most people ever tap everything it can do.
No, I still go back in occasionally to learn something new.
Yeah, yeah. Or I'll like I'm doing right now, I'm looking at my list of workflows I have in Alfred, and there are some that I haven't used in a while and some that I've forgotten were workflows that I just automatically install and use. Dash integration is one that I use constantly. Dash is an app that allows you to have documentation locally for programming languages and fun stuff like that. Just great stuff. So Alfred gets used nonstop.
Constantly. Yep.
Good stuff.
So in that vein, then, I think one of the other pieces I'm going to rant on for just a second is reclaiming screen real estate. Alfred is a big piece of that for me, because I don't just get everything out of the dock. I hide the dock. so that I have all that screen real estate back. And in the latest Mac OS 10, you can hide the menu bar as well, which I've found to be very nice.
Yeah, I'm hiding both. I like it.
Yep. So
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that was a brand new new thing in LCAP, I think.
Cool.
So it's pretty slick. All right, so we'll kind of keep the same order going. So my pick for what apps you can't live without, it would be iTerm 2 for me. And there is a built-in terminal, so if you can certainly use the built-in terminal. And this is a great thing, too, kind of sticking with the minimalist thought on a new Mac install. Certainly, if the built-in terminal app from OS X works for you and does everything you need, you know, it may not be any need to install iTerm 2, but being a person who does developy type things and sysadmin-y type things occasionally, iTerm 2 has a lot of powerful extra features that just is not in the built-in terminal for OS X. And I like to run those. So that's a free one also. Besides BitTorrent and Evernote, I guess we're kind of a half and half free and paid.
And it's a steal at 10 times the price.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, it's good stuff. It's definitely good stuff. Anyway, that's not much more to say on that. So I'm going to turn it over to Jay.
Yeah, so my app that I can't live without is Slack. Slack, all the time Slack. I use it at work every day to collaborate with my team, to share documents.
Have you started using it at home? Have you, you know, created a J team?
Almost. Now, I've done that in Trello. I've got Trello boards that are home specific that we, you know, keep our tasks and things in line, or we're starting to. But Slack is fantastic. They've got some great new commercials out, and if it's collaboration you're after, then Slack is just a fantastic tool. We use it here at HP5, and it makes sharing and context and awareness of what people are doing really helpful. A big part of what I do is project management. And developer engage, not developer management, they manage themselves, but developer engagement to see where we are on projects and progress. And Slack really helps me do that really well.
And their stated goal is to kill email, and that is a noble goal.
Oh my goodness, please.
Preach.
Agreed. Agreed.
Yeah, you won't get any disagreement here.
I want to jump back to something that I want to mention about iTerm. I rely heavily on the ability to hotlink a key combination to hide and show iTerm.
Oh, yeah.
I can't use the built-in terminal anymore because of my reliance on that feature.
Right. So that I'm going to take credit for that one.
Yes. It was Alfred originally.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I formed the habit of full screen iTerm with, I think it was Command Shift Space forever ago, because I was doing so much system admin. And, That was such a win. It's so quick to just throw the whole screen back over to terminal and then get back out of it. I had it set in Alfred, still do actually, to hide or show depending on whether it's currently hidden or shown every time I hit the keystroke. So I'd hit it once and it's shown. I hit it again and it's out of my way.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's
you actually don't you don't need the Alfred one anymore.
Oh, that's right, because it's built into iTerm now.
Yeah, Dieter showed me that a while back, and I dropped that. But that's built in iTerm to show and hide. And,
well, the advantage of the Alfred one is if iTerm is not running, it launches it.
It does launch it, yeah.
So I think I've actually left mine in Alfred for that reason, because I don't run it all the time.
Well, I'm using the one in iTerm because I like to be frustrated.
I launch iTerm.
Right, but you launch iTerm right away.
Once per reboot.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is about once a month.
I find if I can, because I don't have much frustration in life, if I can have something that frustrates me occasionally, it keeps me in check.
It keeps you, yeah.
I like that.
That's good.
Have you tried the Android version of any of these apps?
A lot of times when I launch iTerm, I'm quitting a bunch of other apps because I've been working in a whole different direction and I'm switching gears. So
yeah. No, it totally makes sense.
I could end up with 80 or 100 apps running easily. All right, Quip is my pick for apps I can't live without. I actually had one password down, but since we're pretending like the first question was satisfied with Dropbox and 1Password, I'm going with Quip. Quip has been – it was a find of mine 2 or 3 years ago. Been incredibly happy with it. I regularly share with people that it is what Google Docs wants to be when it grows up. I think there are still a few things like its spreadsheets implementation that will get a little bit more love, I'm sure, over time and be closer to Excel and Google Docs. But especially for content origination around any collaborative space, working with other people on documentation, on processes, procedures, research, you name it. It has just been a phenomenal tool. The ability to chat and discuss any given line or paragraph right there in line, to see who's edited what, to have entire conversations around a doc as well as within a document. It has just been a great addition. So Quip I use probably in some ways today more than almost anything else that we've mentioned outside of maybe Slack. I'm sure that'll change again, but I'm in Quip all the time.
That's a good one. That is a very good one. Okay, so I think we're on to our third question of the day. This should wrap it up. This one turns out to be probably the more challenging one, which I'm sure we'll get into. Which apps are you curious about but have not tried? Or which app, I guess, per person. So everybody picked an app. We'll let kind of Dieter, again, stay in the order here. We've been moving.
Do we need to stay in the order? Let's break it up.
We can stay anywhere. Well, I don't care. I don't care. Do you want to go?
Yeah, let's break it up.
Jay goes.
Yeah, so I'm going to make this easy, and I'll just get in and out. 1Password is mine. You guys have talked it up a lot, and it sounds like my password management strategy could use some maturity and some enhancement. I defer to you guys on that subject and maybe some others too. So
I think I've been harassing you about your password management strategy for about as long as I've known you, because you leaked it early on. And I shook in horror.
Jay's strategy is redacted.
Yes.
We won't tell you what it is because it's so terrifying.
Yeah.
bring on the security.
We also don't want to give anybody ideas to do something like that.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, my stuff is probably pretty findable, so we'll leave it at that, and I'll try to get more secure with your help with 1Password.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Cool. Who wants to go next?
I think Shrop should go next.
All right, I'll go next. My pick is an app called Notability. This is one I may not ever use, but I want to give it a shot. I'm playing around with some note taking items. I'm kind of looking at moving away from Evernote long term. Not necessarily anytime soon, but I've been using Apple Notes a lot lately, and find it pretty slick. I've looked at GoodNotes, and I'm probably looking at that again. I'm back to taking notes on iPads and things like that. Mm-hmm. But being able to sync between iPad and OS X and that sort of thing, Notability is one that's got a really good reputation, and it's one that's kind of on my list now. And because I'm trying to do more handwriting stuff on an iPad, I'm hoping to go ahead and try a couple of different things to see where it lands. But Notability is one I want to check out. So we'll have links to that in show notes.
So last but not least, maybe, is Concentrate. And Concentrate's been on my list for a long time. I've got a set of other apps that I've used that are kind of in this space that have led me to consider Concentrate. I can't say whether Concentrate is going to be a good fit for me or not, but I will mention what I currently use instead of Concentrate, which is Vitamin R. So Vitamin R and the combination of actually Vitamin R and OmniFocus are what I use to take a task and kind of bite off a chunk of time that I'm going to focus on that task. And Vitamin R lets you confirm that a task is complete and actually have it marked complete back in OmniFocus, as well as take a break and come back to a task that you're working on. So Concentrate is really about productivity. The Pomodoro technique and other apps in that space are part of the whole ecosystem. Concentrate, if I remember correctly, has an icon that looks kind of like a slice of an orange. And I don't know if it's going to be a better fit for me than Vitamin R, but it's out there on the list of apps that I want to check out at some point.
Cool. And we actually have Dieter up next.
Last and definitely least, because mine actually doesn't follow in the subject. This has actually turned into a frustration point for me. Most of the things that I'm curious about on the Mac are any of the ones that are worth a darn are available for trial, because general computing, that's why. So the one that I'm curious about and haven't tried yet is OmniGraffle for iPad, because you can't demo it. And it's expensive enough that I really can't just say, well, I'll just get it. I use OmniGraffle a little bit on the Mac. I think that it would probably be more useful to me on the iPad, especially now that they've got the shape detection and Apple Pencil's compatibility. But because you can't demo things in iOS, it's a little frustrating.
Huh. Apple should get on that.
Yeah.
And upgrade options.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Cool. Sounds good. All right. Does anybody have
Are we going to mention resources?
We can.
I just did, obviously.
Yeah, we're going to have some resources well, in the show notes.
I want to toss out two of them on the list anyway that I'm familiar with. One is iusethis.com. And iusethis.com, letter I, use this, is handy for finding apps in a given space. So if you're looking for a Mac app that, you know, productivity or whatever the case might be, I use this as a good resource for finding what people are what apps people are using, and then in some cases why they're using them, what they like about them, etc. And the other one that I'd mention is macupdate.com, which I found to be this predates the Apple App Store for me. Mac Update has their own app and their own $20 a year or $25 a year service that does a great job of letting you know about app updates for all the apps that you have installed that did not come from the Apple App Store, as well as the Apple App Store apps, and giving you a one-click or one-double-click option to update your non-Mac apps right there in Mac Update. So I've been very happy with it, and it also has a decent ecosystem for finding apps, finding what apps were updated today, seeing what other people have given as far as reviews or comments or related apps or recommended related apps on a given app. So iusethis.com is great. MacUpdate.com is great if you are, especially if you are just now starting to use an app, use a Mac, and you are trying to find an app for a given thing. Those two sites are very helpful.
Cool. Sounds good. We'll have links to all the apps, the resources, and all everything that we've mentioned that we can think of to make it in there. Have that in the show notes. And any last words before we go?
No.
All right. I think that wraps up today. We'll be back next week, hopefully, and we'll see you then.
Take care.
See ya.